All right, we're back now with Dale Dunbar, Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent, and talking some hockey sort of in two parts. Dale, welcome back and happy Father's Day as we talk on this Sunday.
Thank you, Rick. Happy Father's Day to you, too.
Thank you, thank you. You know, with the Cup Finals, Bruins out of it, time for a little reflection. And I've discovered YouTube more than ever now, and I've been watching some Bobby Orr videos, in particular circa, I don't know, 69, 70 through 72, 74, that type thing. And
yep.
Besides, and of course, you work with Bobby Orr, you know him very well, and you watched him, and being a former Bruins organization player yourself, you know the legacy. But I guess where I want to start, at the top. First of all, let's start with all the accolades that he accumulated. First of all, with the original six and then the original 12 against arguably the toughest players who ever played. And he was just a young man. What's your reflection on that, Dale, in terms of, you know, six, seven, 8 years in a row winning a Best Defenseman of the Award, MVP, you know, MVP of the whole thing. But just kind of a quick reflection on how you view him.
Oh, he's, you know, he revolutionized the game. I mean, he's, you know, I think you have to say players are the best of their era, because I think a lot of things play into it. You know,
yeah, okay.
There's more games now than there was, and teams now than there was, you know, when they played. You know, there's just a lot of factors, but, you know, Bobby obviously revolutionized the game. I mean, he, for defensemen in the old days, used to be get the red line, dump it in, and that was it. You know, and now, you know, what he was doing, I mean, he could play the whole game if he wanted mm-hmm. to, the way he could skate and perceive the game. He was two steps ahead of everybody. And, you know, the man that discovered him, and I knew him, his name's escaped me right now. I've met him a couple of times, but he, you know, Bob used to say, you know, he used to be bringing in the milk to my mother on the porch because, you know, he wanted him to sign with the Oshawa Generals and you know, play for their organization. And he said Bobby could have played in the NHL at 14 years old. That's how good he was.
Well, the legend is that the scout...
16 years old, excuse me, 16.
Yeah.
14, 16.
But the legend is that they scouts went to view somebody else up there in Parry Sound or some tournament. And they also
and here, you know, there was this kid skating around everybody, and you know, I used to say to him, how did you just get so good, and, you know, and play the way you did? And he said, well, I was the youngest out of all my brothers, and we used to go out on Georgian Bay and make a makeshift rink, and it was basically keep away. It was survival of the fittest for me. I didn't want to get hit. I didn't want to get hit by the older guys, and you know, I just skate around with the puck and try to make them chase me. And that's the same way he played in the NHL. I mean, it was, he had different gears. Guys did not have those gears by any means back then. So
well,
he could have played in any era, obviously.
Okay.
You know, he's just still revered as the best ever. And, you know, and again, in that era, certainly I think Cale Makar is going to be the modern day or I think he'll break a lot of Paul Coffey and Bobby's records if he stays healthy and has the longevity. But Bobby, you know, used to take his skates to school, and that, you know, being a Canadian, that was part of your recess. You could do it, you know, as long as you skate. So he found little patches, went out there, played with his buddies, and you know, he just had fun. You know, when he'd speak at my schools, he would tell parents, "Listen, I never went to a hockey school."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never attended a hockey school. I played sport. I played this game in season. I loved, you know, baseball and different things. He said, so, you know, don't think more is better, because it's not. It's, you know, perceiving the game, preparing for the game. He said, but I never lifted a weight. I never went to a hockey school. So don't get caught up in too many things that people are trying to make you do. A lot of it is your own natural ability.
Well, you've warned us several times when we talk. You've warned the kids, be careful of these, you know, these money grabbing things. And you always reference, you know, Bobby Orr. And I remember listening to him on radio when he would advise parents, look, give the kids the puck, the sticks, throw the thing out in the pond, come back and pick them up a few hours later.
Exactly.
And his thing was...
Right. And, you know, I agree with that. And again, we see in our modern day now where we're not getting so many of those players because there's so many other factors now. There's just too much going on for kids, and we don't see them playing the street hockey anymore, and we don't see them, you know, making themselves better away from the rink with that. Because I think all that supplemental time away from the ice, playing, you know, street hockey, being your idol and having fun and just, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
just being out there for hours, making your hands better without even knowing it, and your overall vision, well, you know, all that plays into it. And
well,
that's why I really believe there were so many better players back in those eras than there are now.
You've also promoted, you know, the multi-sport athlete to your kids as a high school coach. But what I want to ask you about, in particular, Dale, with your eyes and your experience and so on, watching these videos, there's two things that jump out at me with Orr. First of all, on these highlight reels, first of all, it's that there are a lot of them where there's nobody near him. It just seems like there's just no one near him. And I'm talking about 200 feet. He just goes from one end to the other. And then the second thing is that when there are people near him, he seems, which I never saw when I was a kid watching him or a young man watching him, he seems so much stronger because several times I watch these things and he just pushes two defensemen aside with one hand. He keeps his stick, you know, with the other hand on the puck, and then he goes between them and he scores or he makes a great pass or something. So tell me about those two things, his ability to get away from people in open space and his strength.
And I know the clip you're referencing, he went right through two guys, sort of like elbowed them both aside.
Yes!
Went right in and scored. I know the clip because I used to say the same thing. And again, I'll go back to his gears. He had different gears. Lucky win, and then he was gone. You were in his wake, and you weren't catching him. You know, ragging the puck on a two-minute power. I mean, he killed a penalty by himself one time. There's nobody that could do that today.
Yes.
Nobody. And even back then, he just had that ability. And I think nobody really understands how strong Bobby was. He had a lot of natural strength. I mean, when he shook his hand, it was a vice grip.
Oh, but wait a minute, Dale. Dale, you ain't no, you ain't no shrinking violet. So that's what I'm asking you. You guys are all tough out there in defense. And so he didn't look like it, but you're saying he was pretty strong upper body or legs or whatever.
I mean, look at the fight with Pat Quinn.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that.
Pat Quinn got him good once. He almost decapitated him. And the next time Bobby was healthy and he had a chance to get him, he went after him. And let me tell you, he gave Quinn a beating. Pat Quinn was probably one of the toughest in the league back then. So, and he went after Gordie Howe. And he hit Gordie Howe one time, and Gordie got even with him, but he said he deserved it. But he wasn't, Bobby was not intimidated by anybody.
You know, that's one of the great stories of all time, I think, because Bobby Orr was probably in his early 20s at that point, and Gordie Howe was in his 40s, probably.
Yeah, he was one tough kid, you know, and
wow.
Again, I think that's what people don't really understand. You just look at his natural abilities, but you know, he was right in the middle of everything. He wouldn't back down from anybody.
All right, one other thing, Coach. Talk with Bobby Jackson a lot, and he mentions when we're doing high school games, some kids have an ability to see the ice. And I think I know what that means, but it seems like maybe guys like Orr, guys like maybe Tom Brady in football, they see the field, and it sort of means that you sort of know where people are going before they do.
Right. Yeah, and again, it's all those, I feel it's all that time playing other things that you develop a perception of where people should be. You know, Gretzky's father used to draw on a piece of paper and ask him, if he dumps it in, where would this puck go? And he'd make, you know, Gretzky trace it. And so these players that have put up all these stats and have been great throughout the years, it's just a different mindset they're at. They already know where it's going. They already know where somebody should be. One of the great plays Gretzky ever made was a behind the back play to Glenn Anderson for a goal in the Stanley Cup way back against Toronto, and they said, how did you know he'd be there? Mm-hmm. He said, because he should have been.
Okay.
Because that's how we planned, you know, he knew how far behind he was. It was a no-look, and it was a one-timer for a goal. So, again, Orr had it, Gretzky had it, Lemieux had it, you know. And, you know, as good as McDavid and these guys are, MacKinnon, they're great. They're powerful. The play is in front of them. Nobody had the vision or the eyes in the back of the head, as they used to say, like the guys before them. And I think, again, it's that perception of knowing the game and being a student of the game and having that sixth sense of how the game should be played. So, you know, they're special, and that's all you can say. You know, there's not one person even today that can look back at Orr's films and tapes and say, oh my God, like he was just so special. I mean, he could play today. If he was at that age, and he'd be dominant.
I like the way you talk about, you know, eras, and I think that's so important. When talking heads like myself start talking, you know, about lists and stuff like that, that's a good thing to remember.
Yeah. And Doug Harvey, who won the
I think he won
8 Norris trophies before,
or
Montreal, said, "I'm glad I won this one because that kid always going to win the rest of them."
That's it. And everybody talks about, too bad we didn't, you know, he didn't have the surgical techniques that are available now.
Well, yeah, I mean that's a whole different realm of what can take somebody down. You know, to look at his knee was, oh my God, it was so sad. I mean, he literally had scars all over it. He could hardly walk. I mean, he literally went under the knife. And you know, there's one time that he did get butchered, and it's too bad because, again, like you say, if you could have the arthroscopic surgery that they have now, and be able to rehab that much quicker and better, I mean, you know, his career would have lasted a lot longer.
Yeah, and it's too bad he got screwed by the agent there, and he would have been a Bruin a lot longer as well.
Yeah, somebody just brought that up to me yesterday, as a matter of fact. And Alan Eagleson was a powerful man back then. He created the NHLPA, and he dictated what every player could make and where they could play, and he was, you know, you didn't cross him. So Bobby was naive in that sense that he didn't want to believe it. But when the Wirtz family, they did a side deal, and Bobby would have had 19% of the Boston Bruins, which is roughly about $100 million.
My God. Imagine, and he was probably pushing 28, 29 at that point. Oh, my God. And I actually saw the Blackhawk when it came to Gloucester when he was wooing Bobby Orr.
Yep.
It was, I don't know, about 130-footer, and it was a magnificent yacht. But, oh, those were bad days. Anyway, Coach, let's fast forward to the cup here. And before we talk about the finals, I want to ask you your analysis of the finals. I just want to say that one of the things maybe that cut into the Bruins' lack of a run here was all the injuries we're finding out about now.
Yeah, there was some serious injuries. You know, obviously, as you see, whoever takes this job in Boston's going to have his hands full for the first, you know, 3 months, because they're not going to have players back and key players. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's part of the game. You know, to be healthy is probably the biggest asset you can have going into the playoffs. And
all right,
to have your big boys, you know, in or out of those lineup can be either devastating or rewarding, as we see.
Yeah. So tell me about the skin in the game you might have had with the finals here with a couple of your guys.
Yeah, Bogosian, number 24 in Tampa, I've had him since he was 14 years old, and same with Matt Nieto, who's on Colorado. He went back to his original team, San Jose, out of free agency last year. They would have been playing against each other. I feel bad for Maddie because I think Colorado's going to win the Cup, not just because they're up 2-0, but because I just think they're so deep, it's ridiculous. Their third line could be somebody else's first line. And as you see, the secondary scoring, which is huge in the playoffs, You know, McCart just got his first two goals of this series last night, and McKinnon had, I think, only an assist going into, as of last night. So if you look at the third line is, and the second line is what they're doing right now, that's how you win hockey games, because it takes, you know, as much as they'll key on your top players, when your secondary guys are doing all the scoring, you can't cover everybody.
So how do you counter that for Tampa Bay? I mean, that's the other thing I want to ask you. Do you ever play out west up there in the Mile High stuff? Because how do you acclimate to that?
I played in college when I was at BU. We played Denver a couple of times in Colorado College. Yeah, it does factor. You have to get out there. We get out there 2 days early to play them, and our helmets were, you know, we had to loosen up our helmets and stuff like that. And to catch your breath, it does factor into it for sure.
Yeah, I went skiing out there in Utah, and sucking air, getting headaches, and like, what is this all about?
It took a few days. It definitely plays a role, and that's why you have to sort of get out there early and try to acclimate yourself. But it can't be an excuse.
Right.
These guys, you know, it has to be, it's part of it. You know, it's part of it, and you have to deal with it.
Well, they're dealing with Tampa Bay now. They're going back to Tampa, and it's the opposite. Now they're going down to the Heat and all that stuff. But Tampa Bay is pretty resilient, even though they got blown out, what was it, last night? But so tell me about what the Lightning have to do.
They have their hands full. I mean, as good as the Rangers were, a good young team, you know, to be down 2-0, that's, you know, to come back, that was quite a feat. Experience does play a lot into the game, and I think, you know, they have the pedigree, the experience, but at the same time, I just think this is a healthy team, aside from having Kadri in there. For Colorado, I think they're rested, they're focused, they just get everything going, and I think it's going to be, I really think it's going to be very tough to beat them four times to win a cup right now.
All right, that's Dale Dunbar, Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.